Welcome to another episode of the Peak Performance Selling Podcast, where we interview top sellers and sales leaders to learn the different tips, tricks, and mental strategies that they use to create sustainable peak performance. Let's get rolling. By the way, I've never heard anybody say commission breath, and it just hits so perfect.
I'm sure I stole it from somebody, I'll be honest, but I can't. I don't even know how to give it an attribution to.
That's how life works. You know, I have a book that I read as I did this program with Seth Godin called His Alt MBA, and it's like, steal like an artist. You know, how do you take something from someone else and maybe you put your own unique perspective on it and make it your own? But I love that one. I'm curious. So how do you test for that, something like that, in an interview process when you're looking at hiring new sellers? How do you understand, like, are they in this, you know, giving mindset or more of a taking mindset?
Yeah, it's interesting because I think most people interview for the wrong things. So first, I think the first thing we do wrong in interviews is we sell our company too hard. We spend so much time selling the position of the company that we don't actually learn about the people that we're doing. Like, we've got a very structured 4-step interview process to hire people because, and it's got everything from, we want to create pressure in one interview to where we want it to feel like a date in another interview to where we want it to be a presentation in another interview. So we've got a very, very structured process that we follow. And when you're testing for it, I think it's really important to have some non-negotiables that are not on the job description. So as an example, what would non-negotiables be? I want somebody who can show that they can be a student and a teacher in the exact same conversation, right? There's a moment when I want to see that they want to learn what I'm talking about and they're there. And then there's a moment when they have a chance to show me their expertise and show me that they can be the teacher. They must exhibit curiosity, right, at all times. And curiosity, if you are naturally a taker, if you're naturally somebody who's not prone to owning that responsibility, you're less curious because your worldview is more refined on how you want things to come to you rather than how you want to contribute to the world, right? And so I think those are a few of the things when I start thinking about how you interview that you can look for those types of attributes.
Those are some really good ones. I love this concept of student and teacher in a similar, you know, breath almost, where it's like, oh yeah, you can be the educator. You can be somebody that can add value. And you can also sit there and say, hey, I'm curious and let me help understand or learn and develop and grow.
Yeah. Think about the best teachers you've ever had. They understood. They asked you a couple questions before they answered. Right.
We're all selling.
Yeah, it's the difference between answering an objection with your assumption and answering an objection because you understand. Right? Because most of the time somebody says, I don't have the resources to do that. And then we go, oh, that means price. Oh, that means people. Oh, and then we go after the one. Well, resources can mean so many different things. Hey, you know what? I hear that a lot, but it always means something different. What do you mean by resources? Right? I'm curious enough that I can actually then answer the true concept that we're talking about. I'm not assuming that I know it.
Oh, that's great. I think that's awesome. And so to pivot a little bit, I'm curious, you mentioned earlier bringing the gym back into your life. What are some of those routines or how do you help yourself show up at your best? What are those things that you need to do for yourself in a given day that help you really perform and sustain that performance?
So first thing we got to do is I think, you know, a lot of times start with what not to do, right? Those are the easier ones, right? What not to do. There is no such thing as work-life balance. Okay. By definition, balance essentially means equal weight. And there's almost no way that you can make them equally weighted, but work-life alignment is something you can strive towards. So that's what I do. So we strive towards work-life alignment rather than looking for some sort of balance. I know that when I do certain things outside of my professional sphere of sitting in calls like this and talking to clients and talking to our consultant base, I know that I perform better as a human because I'm looking to optimize. Like, people are like, oh, you're a gym guy. I'm like, no, I'm an anti-aging guy, actually. I just want to be able to perform at my best as long as I can. Like I honestly, somebody says, oh, like I turned 50, I don't know, 2 months ago. And people are like, oh, this is part of aging. Now, this is a family-friendly show, so I won't show you which finger I give them. Because it's just not, no, that's because you choose to accept the status quo. So for me, I know there are a few things. And I don't have to be overly anal, but I do have to be disciplined. And so I have to be disciplined about my time I get to the gym, because the gym is a place where I get to expel some of the stress of the day. But it also ends up being a really cool spot, especially on the days I want to put an audiobook in the back while I'm working out, where I'm not really listening, but my subconscious mind's drilling it. Man, I accomplished some cool creative stuff in that space. Right. So one, I get to de-stress. Two, I know it's proven when I'm physically in a better place, I'm more mentally in tune. Right. So we know that we have those things. That doesn't mean that I don't go have a bottle of wine on Friday and Saturday or two with my fiance. That doesn't mean we don't go eat a nice dinner. That doesn't mean we do the other things. So I'm looking to achieve alignment around these things rather than come to some sort of balance. Or all in, because there's the other mistake. You know, I'm going to change everything about my life today and lose 22 pounds in the next week. It took you 4 years to put the weight on. Be okay that it's going to take a second, because small habits are better. Like, there's a great book, and I forgot the author's name, called Atomic Habits. Systems matter more than goals. So you follow that, and those are some of the things that we do.
Love that. Huge James Clear fan of Atomic Habits. It's fascinating to see how accessible identity change is, to your earlier point, when we take conscious focus of what it is that we want to accomplish and how we want to get there and take ownership, opposed to blame victim mindset. You were talking to me earlier before we hopped on about another struggle that you ran into with the gym being such a, you know, important piece of your routines, your health, and anti-aging. Also, happy belated birthday. It's awesome to see that, you know, still pushing and seeing how you can move on this anti-aging mindset, which we might need to talk a little bit more about too. But talk to me about the recent challenge you had with your consistency in the gym and how you had to change your approach or reframe a little bit recently.
Yeah. So about 8 months, actually, I don't know how many months. So it was March 9th. So March 9th, I was doing a 500 pound deadlift and my bicep tore in the middle of the lift. And so it tore, like, for your bicep connects to your forearm and then it kind of up in your shoulder and under your pec, and it tore off my forearm completely. So that happened on March 9th. 8 days later, I had surgery. You know, the surgery, for those of you who are watching on video, you can probably see the scar. But I had surgery 8 days later, was in some form of splint or something for the next 4 months. So most people would then go, oh, I'm done. I took a different approach. I was out of the gym for 1 week. And I went back into the gym and I worked unilaterally, which means the one side that didn't have it in the splint. I did legs, did everything else. And you know what's funny about it? Because this is really about, I don't know if there's even any research on it, to be truthful with you, Jordan, but I think I exercised the power of the mind in this whole concept. I had a couple people tell me, they said, Ken, if you'll just keep working the side of your body you can, growth hormones stuff will flood and your side that's hurt will stay similar. Like, the worst thing anybody in the gym wants is to all of a sudden have like an 11-inch left arm and a 16-inch right arm, right? They said, but if you'll do this, this is what's helped me. And so the problem was, I'm a research heavy guy. And so 9 times out of 10, I'm going to go Google that. And I'm going to Google it in about 17 different searches so that I can figure out different ways that people could be talking about it. But here's what I did different. I decided not to. I just believed that was the thing. And I can tell you, 4 months later, out of the splint, permission within 6 months to start lifting again, my left side of my body and my right side of my body were completely symmetrical coming outside. They were the exact same size.
It's thanks to help from listeners like you, this podcast can continue to grow and help others. If you found anything helpful in today's episode, please take a second, share with a friend, and leave us a 5-star review on iTunes or wherever you get your podcast today. Thanks.